So one comment I just want to share that I got a few moments ago goes to the Yes, I Will song. And they quote the lyric, "In the waiting, the same God who's never late is working all things out." God is working all things out. So if you see me looking at my phone a lot, it's not that I'm not paying attention in church. I'm just wanting to make sure that I see what you all send. As we look at the fruit of patience, we're actually looking at two texts. I mean, of course, we are going from the foundation of Galatians, which is talking about what the fruit of the spirits is: joy, kindness, peace, and of course today, patience. There's also a link with Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 7, which reads, "The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise man than to hear the song of fools. For like the cracking of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. Surely oppression makes the wise foolish, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. The patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit." Thanks, I guess. I mean, Qohelet is not really known for being very cheery. The letter of Ecclesiastes sometimes is very somber. It's kind of a downer. Although I think we can kind of understand where the teacher is coming from. Somebody else commented, "I equate patience to the same thing a woman goes through in the last month of her pregnancy. There is an end. At times it feels like it just seems like a long way away." So maybe it might seem more positive to look at it in terms of a pregnancy, right? The expectation of life coming through. And especially, of course, I can't say this personally, but I would imagine from what I've heard that that last month, those last few weeks, they just drag on and on and on. And yet, this amazing thing is about to take place. And of course, it's not going to be easy. So perhaps part of what Qohelet is talking about is this idea that the best way we can have a perspective on something is to see what the end result might be. So if you think about things of life, if it's pregnancy or maybe something else, maybe it's moving out of a new house or moving out of an old house into a new one. Maybe it's that new job that we're about to get, or maybe we're finally going to be able to see that family member that we have not seen for 2 years. We know what it's like to wait with anticipation. And sometimes we can be so focused on the waiting that we lose sight of everything else, perhaps even the whole reason that we're waiting in the first place. So maybe part of what Qohelet is saying is to be patient is not about avoiding the present so that the future can just hurry up and get here. And maybe on the other token of that, on the same side, maybe we try to be patient or we try to wait for the future by trying to remember what the past was like. You know, if things were just like the way that they used to be, you know, if this pandemic can get over and we can get back to the way things were, you know, BC, before COVID, 2019, how great would that be if we could just get back? I don't know about you, but in this pandemic season, it's probably morbid, but I've read The Stand a couple times in the last 2 years. If you don't know The Stand, it's a famous story about a global pandemic that wipes out 99% of the population, and folks who are left are deciding how to rebuild society. And one of the key things that they want to do is, of course, get electricity back on, right? They want to turn back on the power station. They want to get things running. And this old professor of sociology isn't so sure about that. He says, "We go right back to tinkering with the power station, trying to recreate the world that nearly choked the human race to death. What is wrong with this picture?" Impatience is something that probably always defines our era. It certainly defines our current era and has for a long time. We want everything now. And not only do we want it now, maybe this is the new piece of it, but we also want it better, faster, stronger. And we want it to keep improving for our benefit. hopefully times of distress, and maybe this is the positivity, one of the positivities of what we've been going through, times of distress can force us, or at least allow us, to reevaluate our priorities. So maybe some of the things that we thought were so important before don't seem quite as big and as important and as attentive as they used to. So this feeling of impatience that we have, what if it's part of that spiritual nudge? What if it's a spiritual nudge to get some things to change instead of us just hoping that we get back to those things, those realities? So this idea that we want to go back to 2019, one pastor wrote an article and the headline was, 2019 is dead. And in the midst of that somber title, he writes about how there's, you know, three or four things that we could do to try to usher ourselves into the future. And this is primarily about, you know, church communities and congregations, but I think it could also apply to all aspects of life. He writes, number one, we should find a new sustainable pace. So the pace that we are at, right, when we were just going and going and going, we had all these appointments and we had all these deadlines and responsibilities. Maybe we don't necessarily need to go back to all of that. Point number two, we should focus on the people we have reached, not the people we have lost. Now, all of us, whether we're talking about church or not, have lost. Some of us have literally lost friends, loved ones, to this pandemic. We have lost friends, family members, loved ones because of ideology and philosophy, maybe even faith. We have people that we have just not heard from. Maybe we don't know where they are. But in the midst of that, hopefully, we have also built new relationships. Maybe we have finally gotten to know our neighbors a little bit closer. Maybe we've noticed people in these new habits that we've had, maybe the walks that we have gone on, or maybe going out into our yards a little bit more often. Hopefully we have seen opportunities in which we have been able to establish new relationships. So yes, we have lost, but hopefully we have also found. And then the last one, we should focus on what we can control, not on what we cannot control. Again, we always go to what we cannot do. We can't control how slow things are going, or we can't control what so-and-so thinks, or we can't control when we can finally take these stupid masks off. But we can control the fact that we have a really cool pumpkin patch out on our front lawn, and that people are coming to it, and it's a response for us not to sell pumpkins. I mean, that's nice. But the real opportunity is for us to continue to build and even rebuild community. To be that source of kindness, of grace, of love, of peace, those fruits of the Spirit, to embody that to those who we encounter on that front lawn. So with these words of Ecclesiastes that are kind of somber and maybe even a little depressing, Paul kind of writes his letter in a way that links to the theme and the message of Ecclesiastes. At least kind of in terms of how somber things are, because again, Paul is writing to communities who he has known, who he has pastored and gotten to know, and he knows they're in trouble, he knows that they're struggling, and he wants to give a word of comfort to them. But if we know Paul at all, it's not always really a sunshiny, rainbowy kind of hope. It's still very much in reality. And so in the midst of all this, he brings up this idea of patience. And what patient spirit are we supposed to be living into? What patient spirit are we supposed to keep our eyes out and open for? What are we waiting on? And so he writes to this in Romans 8. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan inwardly while we wait. While we wait for adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Then here comes the famous line, hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. And that's supposed to give us these warm feelings of patience, right? These warm feelings of being able to set back and to let go and let God, as we might often say. But we also know that there are those of us who may be thinking, but what about right now? What about right now? Is that such a wrong question to ask? What about right now? Because what we see, while it is surely not bad, we can also acknowledge and realize that there are some pretty bad things that are going on in our world. So bad that it may prompt us to ask this question from time to time. Well, what about right now? What is it that we're really waiting for? And I think Paul understands this. Not only does he understand it, I think he's anticipating it from his people. When he writes, "We ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we groan inwardly while we wait." While we wait for adoption. So even if one is optimistic, even if we're a glass is half full kind of person, we could probably even say out loud during this season that we are surely not at that point where our cup has runneth over. We still have a long way to go. Now, there's a few ways that we can look at this. We can look at it and say, you know, that day, that glorious day, it's going to come any moment. And that's not to say that it's not true, but there's a couple of different ways I think that we can look at this. Number one, we could do it the way that Coach Lasso looks at it. You know that episode in Coach Lasso? If you don't know Coach Lasso, he's an American football coach that's been sent overseas to Europe to coach soccer. Of course, there it's football. But he does it with this bright array of optimism and enthusiasm. And not only is he trying to help his team win, but of course, like any good coach, he's trying to help his teammates, you know, his players, be the best version of themselves that they can. And one of the ways that he does this is with pure joy and optimism. So one day they come back to the locker room after losing once again. And he says to his players, you know, I believe in communism. Rom communism. And this, of course, he's talking about not communism. He's talking about romantic comedies. And this idea that with romantic comedies, you have this staple of the storyline. And the ending is always the same. The couple gets together, they fall in love, and everything is great. Coach Lasso says, that's what I believe in. I believe that everything is going to turn out okay. Now, whether you watch this series or not, just by living life, we all know that's not how it works. Now, ironically, when we're thinking about actual historical communism, Karl Marx, who's a famous German philosopher and is kind of attached to this idea, he kind of warns about this. He warns about how religion can so easily become this kind of flight of fancy, that our belief is not really in God, but just in this magical solution that everything will turn out all right. That's kind of, I think that's kind of sort of true, but not altogether totally. I mean, just because we hope, and just because we have faith, doesn't mean that we're trying to escape from reality. Sometimes, if we're honest with ourselves, that can be the case. But there's that other kind of hope. The hope that Paul is writing about, the hope of what we do not see. And what we do not see is not about escapism. This might be what Paul is talking about when he says, we wait with patience. Because patience is not the same as acceptance. It's not the same thing as compliance. It's not the same thing as denial. Patience, in this sense, is saying that we are not satisfied with the present, but we're also living in that present, looking forward to that future with God. And I know that sounds kind of odd. In fact, I may even kind of contradict. A great example, a powerful example, at least to me, is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is a German pastor and theologian who was alive and very active in the midst of World War II. In fact, he was one of the pastors who was involved in a very famous assassination plot against Hitler. When Bonhoeffer and his team are found out, he goes to prison in Berlin, and he's there for quite a long time. In the midst of that, he is still a pastor. He is still a believer. He is still a child of God. And one of his famous works, Letters and Papers from Prison, he writes about certain individuals who have this kind of idea that God is going to rescue them, or at least somebody is going to rescue them. Someone's going to come into this prison, burst open the walls, and pull all the prisoners out. And he writes about how those are the people who die first, because they just cannot cope with a reality that is so much against this flight of fancy, this escapism, this belief that everything's going to turn out fine. And yet, at the same time, he believes that hope will come. In the midst of this horror, in the midst of this destruction, in the midst of this agony, there is a better future forward. The difference is he's living in a present that he's not trying to sugarcoat or ignore because of his faith. But on the other hand, his faith is so powerful that he still leads fellow prisoners in the act, in the sacrament of communion, even when he does not have the bread or the cup. So you might be asking, well, what is left? The movement. And he writes about sitting in a prison cell with his fellow inmates and just simply taking hands and sending them and sharing them to one another, saying, "This is the body of Christ, and it is broken for you. This is the blood of Christ, it is shed for you." And so they commune in the sacrament of movement. And oftentimes it is so powerful that Bonhoeffer even does this with the Nazi prison guards. That was his hope. Now, although Paul indicates that there is a hope that is not seen, he also indicates that there is a fruit of the Spirit. And we have to remember to hold these two realities together. Oftentimes, if we just think about the one and not the other, it can make this idea of patience weird, confusing, perhaps even frustrating. But that's why we have to hold the verses together. Because if hope is only something that is in our imagination, then it's only going to stay there. See, Bonhoeffer didn't just imagine this hope that God was going to rescue them. Bonhoeffer practiced and lived and acted in that present reality that God was already at work in their lives. If we can see how hope is alive in what first seems dead, or what might seem unlivable, that's not trying to put something that does not belong in the reality that we are in. It's about changing ourselves. It's not really even about changing the world or the reality around us, but changing ourselves so that our eyesight, our perception, our spirits realign so that we see what is already there. That's our whole theology as United Methodists about grace. The grace that is there before we see it, but at some point a realignment happens when we're able to see that which has been there all along. Who has been there all along? And in the sanctifying grace, we continue to try to adjust our sight, our alignment, our spirit, so that we see it more directly and more often as possible. So someone asks, can one be patient but also be frustrated? Absolutely. I hope so, because that's me like every day. Bonhoeffer, I'm sure, was frustrated. The fellow prisoners, I'm sure, were frustrated. People here in Lakeland, I'm sure, are frustrated. People around the world, I'm sure, are frustrated. And when we read Paul's words, we might think, well, Paul just wants people to be patient and to stop being frustrated. That's not it at all. And it can seem hard to hear about how it is that we're supposed to be patient to someone who says that when they don't seem frustrated themselves. I mean, isn't that the annoying thing that someone stands and just says, oh, just be patient, just wait a little bit while longer. And we're thinking to ourselves, but you don't understand. But God understands. And see, that's the thing about Paul, is that Paul, while he says that these are fruits of the Spirit and that we need to follow them, Paul is very much about the resurrection and the post resurrection. The idea that Jesus rose and he ascended, and any day he's going to come back. And so we just need to wait a little while longer. We just need to be a little bit more patient. We need to live into these fruits. We need to make sure that our souls are aligned and that we're doing the right things to keep us in touch with God, so that when Jesus does come back, we are seen as followers and not rebels. We just need to wait. And then, of course, that doesn't happen. And so they wait a little bit longer. And we wait a little bit longer, and it never happens. And then, as this person says, I feel inferior to the people with whom I work. Like I'm trying to get to their level. So not only are we waiting, but now we feel like there's something wrong with us because we have these feelings of needing to wait, of needing to get to some place that we're not already. And so again, what is it that we are waiting for? Who is it that we are waiting for? Then someone else says, so patience is a virtue to attain, and then in parentheses, well, not necessarily. Absolutely. So we look at these fruits of the Spirit as something that we're trying to attain, right? But of course, the title, and I can't remember, I know we've messed up the slideshow at this point, but we should have a rooted slide. It might be toward the end. It's not a virtue that we're trying to attain. It's something that we're already rooted to. We are already rooted to patience. We are already rooted to joy. We are already rooted to peace and to kindness and to love. But sometimes we forget. And we don't allow the nourishment that we need to feed our roots to come through because we're so worried about how we're supposed to appear or who we're supposed to be or how we're supposed to do it. And we forget what it is, who it is we are already rooted toward. And that's what Paul was encountering. He was encountering people in Romans and Galatia and Corinth and all of these places saying, I'm not sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And Paul says, be patient. It's coming. And then some generations go by and people are wondering, well, where is Jesus? He says Jesus is going to come back. Where is he? And then we get the Gospels that say to us, you know what? Jesus has been here all along. The kingdom of God is already here. We just need to open our eyes and to see that it is already here. And this gets into Paul's theology of the already but the not yet. The idea that God is already here, but there is something more to come. But that doesn't leave this sacrament any less meaningful or powerful. And so in those gospel stories, we are reminded that as we are waiting, we also have a chance and an opportunity each and every day to participate in that which, in who which already exists, which of course is Jesus Christ. So yes, we are to wait. But as Nikki said in her sermon earlier, it is not a passive waiting. It is an active waiting. This is why we practice the fruits of the Spirit, joy, peace, love, kindness, patience. It's because we are rooted to them. And when we act upon them, that is part of what feeds our roots. It is not something we have to wait to come to us. We are able to live into it. And it feeds us that much more. So one last comment. I just saw this during communion. The already here but not yet makes me think of those old Billy Mays infomercials. But wait, there's more. God is already here loving us and working through us, but God is not done with us yet. There's still a lot of work to do, a lot of restoration and transformation to experience, but we experienced it right here and right now in the gift of the bread, in the gift of the cup, with the communion of saints, in the presence of the Holy Spirit. All of that is happening right now. It is not what we have to wait for. It is part of who we are and what we can be, what it is that we are rooted to. But as we work in that together, we are helping to see how it is that God continues to work through us and with us so that we are a part of that great future yet to come. We know that it is hard. We know that it is uncertain. It is challenging. It is draining. And sometimes we just simply don't want to wait. But it's not like Dr. Seuss is the waiting place, you know, when you just sit there and you do nothing. It's the idea that we are living into these fruits as we are waiting for that next great adventure, that next great reality. But in the midst of that, we have a reality that we can be a part of right now, that we take the bread and the cup that we receive and we go share it with the world. Remember where you are rooted, but also remember your roots go much farther than you may think, and they are connected. Remain connected with one another so that our fruits may blossom and share with the world. And may we go in peace. Amen.